Welcome to another edition of the weekly daily fantasy football podcast on the IB Sports Podcast Network. I am your host on cloud nine because the Atlanta Hawks just smoked the Dallas Mavericks. The Atlanta Braves are one game away from the World Series. Georgia Bulldogs are number one in the country. And as Joe sent me the great tweet last week, the Atlanta Falcons were on a bye. So starting Sunday, maybe that cloud nine will go away a little bit, but I'm your host, Keith Fleming. With me, as always, I guess I'm going to have to start calling you now Joe the Brain, Matt. Thanks to Alan.
Well, who knows what my nickname is month to month in the group?
Well, at least for Alan, that's a nice
you guys,
one.
Right? You guys all have a different name. It's the smartest man in IBN from RC. It's the Brain from Alan. It's the man with the stats from you. So I'll take them all.
Yeah, they're all good, you know. And from Alan, for it not to be, you know, like the nerd or like whatever, I was just surprised.
That's true. It's surprisingly complimentary.
Who, by the way, while we're doing that real quickly, remind everyone the IB Sports Podcast Network is available on iTunes, Spotify, and Anchor. We'd greatly appreciate it if you would rate, review, share, subscribe, all that. Alan has been on fire with his gambling picks. 11-0 last week. It was unreal. Really was. I felt so bad for him that I recorded the podcast with him. It did not work. He could not convert it to an MP3, but I will vouch that his picks were wrong. Luckily, he did a write-up on Sunday morning. They were 8-for-8, but I will vouch the other three were also on there. We also got the You Got a Minute fam. You and Alan are doing a great NFL recap that I've really enjoyed, but we're here to talk about fantasy football. We're going to get right into week 7. And just to remind everyone, there is six teams on a bye. Is that right? 5 or 6? What is it, Joe?
6.
So, yeah. And your season long and daily fantasy.
And some really good teams, too. So that also does not help.
But let's get right into the quarterbacks this week, which is, I'm not going to lie, I was telling Joe beforehand, I only have 2 picks this week. I didn't want to just pick one to pick one. I didn't feel comfortable about any of the ones. My top tier guy, though, I do feel comfortable about. It's Lamar Jackson, 7,400 versus Cincy. He had his worst game fantasy-wise this season last week. On paper, the Bengals are one of the tougher matchups for fantasy quarterbacks. However, going back and looking at it, they faced Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence, Big Ben Roethlisberger, or the ghost of Big Ben Roethlisberger, and Jared Goff. In the other two games, when they faced Aaron Rodgers and Kirk Cousins, Cousins threw for 300 yards and multiple scores, scoring 25 points. Rodgers also threw for over 300 yards, multiple scores. He scored 23.76 points. So don't let that number scare you. I mean, and this is not disrespect the Bengals, but if you're playing Fields, Lawrence, Big Ben, and Goff each week, you're going to have good numbers against quarterbacks. That's just the way it is. He's priced too low at 7,400. I mean, this is a guy who scored 20 or more in all of his games minus last week and has 2 games with 37-plus. He's rushed for 50 or more in 5 of 6 games. That's a guaranteed basically 5 extra points there. That's if he doesn't score a touchdown as well. And most importantly, I don't see a similar script to what happened last week, which is really the main reason that he scored so little points, was they just, I mean, boathoused the Chargers. Shocking for me. Another one that Alan called on the gambling podcast said, you know, the Chargers came out of a battle and the Ravens did not. And the Ravens did. They beat him up. And the one other thing on Lamar, I think he's the one quarterback you don't need to stack. I mean, if you want to, I love Rashad Bateman.
I think there is one other that.
Oh, you're going to say Hurts, I bet. That's really fair. I didn't think about that. But if you do want to stack him, I really do. I know most people are going to go Marquise Brown, Mark Andrews. I love Rashad Bateman, their first-round rookie. He's going to come up again later on the podcast. But you can get the two of them for $10,800. Lamar Jackson is my top-tier quarterback this week.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. Obviously, he was the guy I went with last week, and like you said, it didn't go my way because it went so far the Ravens' way in that game, where they didn't even need him to go off. But like I just alluded to, Jalen Hurts is my top tier this week at 6,900 against Vegas. The other guy who you do not necessarily need to stack. Hurts has started 10 games in his career, and the only time he didn't score at least 21 on DraftKings was week 17 of last year when Doug Peterson pulled him for the entire fourth quarter in a successful ploy to avoid coaching the Eagles this season. Hurts even scored 17 in that game in three quarters. Obviously, you know, as any Eagles fan can tell you, it's not always super pretty through the air. But he's averaging 10 points per game on the ground this season.
It's unbelievable.
Only eight running backs are averaging more than that on the ground. So if you take away the receiving part, he's the ninth best running back. And despite that, he's also, you know, he's not hopeless as a passer. Obviously, there's some real world limitations, but at least in fantasy, he's had three multi-score passing games. He's topped 300 yards twice this season. Vegas's defense can best be described as aggressively mediocre. They gave up over 300 yards to Teddy Bridgewater last week. Ben Roethlisberger hit 295 against them earlier this season. So there's a decent chance that the Eagles will be able to do something through the passing game. Devonta Smith looks increasingly good, although last week I know obviously didn't go the way we thought it would.
Son of a bitch.
And then the Raiders. They look good on offense right now. They actually looked better without Gruden calling the plays last week. And so if they put up points on the Eagles defense, which I think they're very capable of doing, then you end up in an even more pass heavy Jalen Hurts type of game. And obviously the thing is him dropping back to pass doesn't limit his rushing ability. We just want the ball in Hurts' hands.
Yeah. The Cowboys and Bucks.
So I think
games.
Yeah. Yeah,
or the recipe. Even if they get down, he scores a ton late.
Right. The Bucs game, he, for whatever reason, couldn't pass in that game. Runs for two touchdowns. The Cowboys game threw a couple picks, but you added up all the yards rushing and passing, and he was still giving you 20+. So you add it all up. I think he's a top five value, and he's at under 7,000. So I'm in on Hurts. Although, yeah, I'd love the Lamar play. As I think both these guys right now, it's hard not to love them every week, and their prices are not extreme.
Yeah, it is weird that their price is not really. Both of them have kind of stayed stagnant.
Right, because I think their average is like 26 per game.
Yep,
I think both of them, and
that's what you're going to get from Murray, Brady, those guys, and they're much more expensive when they play.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, why don't you go over your mid tier? Because technically, I guess mine's a middle.
That's right. And what I think we have the same guy in that middle low tier as well. My mid tier, like I said, I think the Raiders looked better without John Gruden calling. Me, Derek Carr at 6,000 versus Philadelphia. Carr's second only to Tom Brady in passing yards this year. Some of that's been driven by his 39 passing attempts per game, but he's also averaging 8.4 yards per attempt. In fact, last week was his highest yards per attempt ever in a game. He benefited from new offensive play caller Greg Olsen's increased usage of play action. They were one of the lowest play action teams under Gruden. Last week, 25% of his dropbacks were play action. It's clear his chemistry with Henry Ruggs is light years ahead of where it was last year, which has really opened up a more aggressive part of Carr's game. This is really, it's about as well as he's ever played, going back to that year where some people thought he was in the MVP conversation before getting hurt. Eagles, they actually do have pretty good corners, Darius Slay, a couple other guys. Their linebackers, though, are an absolute disaster. Their only good safety is 5'10". So this might be Darren Waller time this week. He did not end up being my play just because I usually don't go for the high-priced tight ends. But if you want to pair Carr and Waller, this is a great chance to do it. You don't usually see a guy with a real shot to lead the league in passing all the way down at 6,000 unless they're facing an elite defense. And Philly's not elite, so I say take advantage.
Yeah, I like that. Carr is really the undervalued guy this year. We've been talking about it for a few weeks now. Despite him, you know, I know he's had, I think, two bad games, but he's had four really good games.
Yeah.
And his price is not really going up. And I mean, that's the kind of, you want to always get those guys before they kind of catch up with the value, which is, you know, really what this is all about. The low tier, we had the same guy. It's Matt Ryan, 5,700 at Miami. I'm going to go ahead and tell you, I think Atlanta is primed for a huge week offensively. You know, they're coming off a bye. Miami played in London last Sunday, which I don't ever remember a team playing in London and not getting their bye after it. It's really weird. I mean, the Falcons went over there the week before, so they've actually, you know, been off since really early. Of course, obviously, they had the flight on Sunday. Miami's lost five straight. They've gave up 32.2 points per game during that stretch. They've given up 10 passing touchdowns in their last four, an average of 336 yards per the air. And even if you remove Brady's 411 performance, Carr, Wentz, and Trevor Lawrence averaged 311 yards per game against them. Again, that's not a murderer's row. Carr obviously is having a good year. Wentz is starting to look better too. But again, for those three guys all to have good games. The biggest thing for me is the fact that Lawrence threw it 41 times last week and was not picked. Really wasn't ever in danger of turning it over. And that's what makes me so giddy about this
matchup. Which has been rare this season.
Exactly. Yep. And I mean, for rookies in general, really. They really pay. Ryan has averaged 23 points per game since his awful week one, averaging 290 through the air. In those games, 10 touchdowns to three picks, but 8 touchdowns to 0 interceptions in the last three. I know the Dolphins had their issues in the run game, but let's be honest. Mike Davis has been a bust signing. Patterson, he's looked really good, but a majority of his damage comes through the air, so that's only going to help Ryan. And the Falcons have yet to run it 30 times in a game. They're going to throw. I think Ryan with Ridley or Pitts is the best bargain stack this week. And really, you can't go either one of them because both Pitts and Ridley are at good prices as well.
Yeah, Matt Ryan's my low tier as well. I'm like you said, you know, I just mentioned Carr's throwing it 39 times a game. Yeah, it's 42 times per game for Matt Ryan this season. And if you take away that first week, where it's obviously the whole offense just looked off against Philly week one, he's averaged 292 yards and 2.5 touchdowns. Like, he's been probably about as much as you could ask of Matt Ryan at this stage in his career. He's been giving it the last 4 weeks.
Especially that offensive line.
And then Xavier Howard, Byron Jones, they're both questionable. They might be returning this week. But honestly, in the games they played this year, they've not been particularly impressive. So I wouldn't suddenly fade this team because of that. The only thing I worry about is the Sunday forecast is scattered thunderstorms in Miami. So I would check that Sunday morning, as long as it's not something crazy. Like, if Matt Ryan, as long as he can grip the ball, I feel good about this one.
Yeah, he actually is not a bad player in bad weather games. He's always done pretty well in cold and rain. As a Falcons fan, I think they say he has big hands, and that's what is a difference there. I don't know. But
I remember in college, he had a rain game against Virginia Tech where he threw 2 touchdowns in the fourth quarter to come back and win. So
yeah, so hopefully he gets it going. Not to mention just for my Falcons to tease me a little bit longer this season. moving on to the running backs. Darrell Henderson, 6,600 versus Detroit, my top tier. I'm going to have to call him Joe's boy. Not only has he been Joe's play several times with his picks as well as mine, but Joe included him as one of his favorite plays at running back on our preview podcast for the season. And he's just been the most consistent, non-expensive, like really expensive running back in the league in fantasy. He scored at least 15.7 points in every game this season, which is really remarkable. He's averaging 18 on the season. He's getting just under 20 touches a game when you include the targets out of the backfield. He scored in 4 or 5 games. He's coming off his highest points scored in a game this season with a rushing and a receiving touchdown. And now he faces the Lions. And, I mean, they're better this year against the run, I will say, than obviously they were last year. But they're not good. They've already given up 8 touchdowns on the season to opposing running backs. With Mixon, Montgomery, and Jones all had over 100 total yards in their games. And 7 touchdowns combined. They all scored. I just think Henderson is a lock for a touchdown and 100-yard total offense. I know that we were talking briefly before the podcast that you're a little nervous that, you know, the game gets out of hand. I have a feeling that the Rams and McVay are going to kind of let them. I mean, just look what they did last week. They were beating your boys down when they score like 28 points in the second quarter, and I think another 14 in the third. I mean, they've been an offense that kept a foot on the gas. Obviously, this is a a big game for Stafford. I was going to include him, but he technically was a high tier because I would just think he also wants to have a big game and, you know, his coming home party. But it just, I think Daryl Henderson's pretty much a can't miss, and he's right on the borderline to where he's going to start getting too expensive. So this is a perfect price at 6,600.
Yeah, he's also my top tier this week. I'm sticking with the Daryls this week. It worked last week. Yeah, like you said, the one thing that worries me a little bit, and the reason why I didn't take Stafford last week, which was a mistake, is my top tier. It's the same this week where I'm a little worried about him in the passing game if they will keep their foot down on the pedal. But again, Henderson's fine either way. If they're just running the clock out because they're up 20 points, then he should be getting carries. If not, he's involved in the passing game. Caught a touchdown last week. Again, there obviously the big fear coming into the year, if you were a big Daryl Henderson backer like I was, was Sony Michel, how much was he going to take out of that backfield? Henderson's played at least 2/3 of the snaps in every game. In the 3 games since he came back from his injury, he's out-touched Michelle 20-8 on average. So he's the guy. Like you said, Detroit, a little bit better than last year. Still pretty awful. You know, don't overthink it. Daryl Henderson, especially at this price, 6,600. I think this guy's a top 5 running back play this week.
And I mean, he's top 5 running back on the season. Again, the consistency as somebody who has him and 2 season longs. It's nice. It's nice to look down every week and know you're going to get 15 points. Because unless you have Derrick Henry, pretty much at this point, you know, and I guess Elliott would be the other guy. The other guys have really been inconsistent. I mean, even Kamara and those guys, it's, you know,
up and down. Eckler is a guy that we love, but, you know, as we saw last week, there's the off weeks.
Yep. We had the same mid-tier as well, which makes me feel really bullish about both of them.
The Daryls.
I think we had them last week as well, both, and it worked out very well. Why don't you go ahead and go first, since I went first on the last one.
Yeah, like I said, I'm riding with the Daryls again. Williams also gets the bump up. He was my low tier last week. Now he moved up to the mid tier at 5,800 against the Titans. 89 yards, 2 touchdowns last week. I do not imagine he's going to see 21 rushes again this Sunday, because this one's probably going to be more competitive, I assume, with Tennessee. But 24 touches and a 72% snap share is exactly what you want to see for as long as Clyde Edwards-Helaire is out. And then even beyond that, 4 straight games with multiple receptions. So that even goes back to when CEH was healthy. So he's involved in the passing game. Tennessee's numbers against running backs look better than they are, thanks to only 6 teams seeing fewer rushes per game. But that's more of a product of teams wanting to pass against their awful pass defense than any fears about their defensive front. The Titans give up 4.6 yards per carry, which is the same number as the Detroit Lions, who we just mentioned are terrible. So there's no reason to think they're going to slow down the Kansas City offense on the whole. Like, Kansas City is going to put up a ton of points in this game. I thought the Bills looked off last Monday, and they put up 27. So there's going to be a lot of opportunity for Daryl Williams to score in this game. It would not surprise me if he scores multiple touchdowns again.
Yeah, he might be my favorite play this week. In the last 3 games where you had 1 Kansas City running back who started and got the majority of the carries, Helaire in his final 2 scored 22.4 and 20.9 points. And then obviously, as we just talked about, Williams scored more than that with 23.9 scoring twice. Tennessee's with the, or here it is. So the value in this play is, with the exception of Cordell Patterson and Derrick Henry, who obviously, I mean, even Patterson's 500 more, Henry's 3 grand more. Every other running back ahead of him is averaging 19 points per game or less. And again, as I just said, a Kansas City running back in this offense over the last 3 games, the starter is averaging right at 22 points per game. The Titans have given up a touchdown to a running back in 5 of their 6 games this season, and they've already proven they've had big-time issues against good pass-catching backs and Chase Edmonds, Hines. Overall, they've given up 28 receptions to running backs, so almost 5 a game, which is something Williams can do as well. I'm shocked he's priced this low because, again, you're getting the Kansas City's defense is terrible. Their offense has not really been talked about because the team hasn't been as good. It's historically good. Like, historically, they're so sloppy.
They're still awesome.
They would be scoring 40 a game.
Yeah, the only times they don't score is really because they turn it over.
So,
legitimately 40 a game if they weren't turning it all over so much.
So, for 5,800, I mean, again, Daryl Williams will probably be in every lineup. I mean, you can mix the other backs with him, but just you're not going to get a better value for that price, especially as Joe said. He was on the field pretty much the entire game. My low tier, who I also really like this week, is JD McKissic, 5,000 at Green Bay. And this is really simple. This is not one of these long, drawn-out things. Gibson has a stress fracture. He's trying to get through it. There's been rumors that he was going to get put on IR. That has not happened yet. But last week, we're seeing it. McKissic saw 60% of the snaps to Gibson's 40. That has not happened since Gibson took over as a starter. I think he hadn't seen less than 65% of the snaps since he took over is what I read. And I also believe Green Bay is going to roll. Washington's defense, particularly against the pass, is just, I mean, it's like at Tampa Bay levels late in the season last year. Tennessee early in the year, which Tennessee's is still really bad, as we saw on Monday night, but they've slowed it down a little bit. Washington now is a team that, I mean, I think in the last two games I saw, they've given up 400 yards to wide receivers and five touchdowns. So, yeah. And McKissic plays more when they're in passing situations. Three of his last five games, he scored 16 points or more. So I think he's going to end up playing more than Gibson, who's like $1,200 more. So you're getting a bargain there. And then again, if Green Bay gets up, which I think is going to happen, that's just going to mean McKissic is in more because they're going to be in passing situations, which he almost predominantly plays in those. At 5,000, I think he's a pretty good bet to get double-digit points. I really like McKissic 5,000 as my low play.
Yeah, I like the reasoning behind that one a lot. Like you said, that Doug Gibson injury is not going away. Makes McKissic that much more valuable. My low-tier guy this week, this will only apply if you're doing the Sunday night game or the Sunday through Monday plays, but it's Elijah Mitchell, 5,100 versus Indianapolis. He's played at least 60% of the snaps in all three games he's played, and before their bye, he out-carried Trey Sermon 9-1. This is his job. And then with Jimmy G back, Mitchell probably won't have his QB stealing 16 carries anymore. So I expect him to get back to that high teens, potentially even low 20s if they take the lead in this game that he was at before. The Colts run defense is solid, but this is another one where they look better than they actually are thanks to games against an inept Miami rushing attack and the Ravens having to abandon their geriatric backs in favor of an all-Lamar offense when they fell down multiple scores 2 weeks back. So beyond literal Titan Derrick Henry, the Seahawks, Rams, and even Texans backfields have all managed at least 90 yards rushing and 28 yards from scrimmage against the Colts. I would expect similar numbers for the 49ers backs. And like I said, he is the clear number one back here. So most of that production is going to come from him. And he's only down at 5,100. So yeah, if you're playing the Sunday night game or you're doing a Sunday Monday game, I would be putting Elijah Mitchell in all my lineups for those two.
Yeah, he's in my Thursday to Monday. I got three lineups. I went with every one of them with Johnson for Cleveland. And right now I have Mitchell or McKissic in as the other back. And, I mean, you get both of those guys for under 10 grand. That's always a good deal. Real quick before we move on to receivers, Jonathan Taylor, he went up a little bit, but it's still not. I think he's like 7,100. Do you like him this week versus San Francisco, or would you fade him? Because he's been so hot. They're pounding the rock. I mean, he scored, I think, 20 or more in three straight. Would you not be afraid to roll him with that, or would you kind of stay away this week?
I wouldn't be out on him. For me, though, it's just I like Henderson more this week, and he's 500 cheaper. If for whatever reason, you decide to go with both of them, I think that's fine. I don't have an issue with that. I like Taylor. I do think, San Francisco's line is pretty tough to run against. But, like you said, he's been wildly explosive the last couple of weeks. I mean, over 10 yards of carry last week. But to me, you go Henderson first, save yourself a 500 in a better matchup. And if you want to go heavy at running back, then I'm fine with it. I'm not for fading him. I'm just for fading him in favor of Darrell Henderson.
Yeah, and also just want to say, if you can get Derrick Henry in your lineup, I know he's 8,900. He's pretty much like every big lineup I'm doing now, cost-wise, I am actually kind of changed because he's been so good along with either Adams or Hill, where I'm just going Henry, Adams, Hill, and then building my lineup from there. Because, I mean, it's at this point, especially with Henry, unless he has a tough matchup, which, no offense to Kansas City, their defense is not very good. He's been incredible. And I can't, you know, obviously I'm not going to give him as a pick because everybody knows that, but I just want to remind people, don't be afraid of 8,900. There's some guys that they get too expensive and it's crazy. Derrick Henry is not one of them. Moving on to the receivers, I was really close to going with Devontae Adams as my top tier, but Tyreek Hill is $300 cheaper at 8,600 at Tennessee. I want to leave 300 in any of my lineups because there is technically a question that Hill will not suit up Sunday. I don't think it's anything other than just rest. We've seen this a couple of times with him this year. But, I mean, this is a dream matchup. The Titans are decimated with injuries in their secondary. The Bills last week were able to throw on them at will. I don't know why they were trying to run the ball late in the game when, I mean, in those situations where they were throwing, I don't know why they weren't throwing. But anyway, I counted three times during that game that there was a miscommunication because they had, you know, different corners in with injuries and stuff on defense that led to a wide open receiver down the field. One of them was the Cole Beasley touchdown. I can promise you, if that happens, Hill and Mahomes will probably make them pay. I also like the KC receivers because the Titans have been one of the better teams defending tight ends. Kevin Berard, safety for the Titans, is the best cover of tight ends in the league. He's lined up more than any other safety in the NFL versus tight ends and has only seen six targets come his way, giving up just three catches, has a pass breakup and an interception. I'm obviously not saying he's going to shut down Kelce, but I think that's going to mean a tougher matchup. And obviously we know Mahomes typically feeds both of them 10 to 12, you know, targets. Well, let's say Kelce ends up getting seven. Normally those extra targets are going to go to Hill. And against this Titans secondary, I mean, as much as I like Devontae Adams this week, I think that the game's going to be more competitive, obviously, with Kansas City and Tennessee. And I just think Tyreek Hill's ceiling is more. I mean, we've already seen it. He's already had a 40 and a 50-point game this year. And I would be not shocked at all if he has multiple touchdowns of 40 or 50 yards or more. And for all those reasons, if you can find it, I really do like Tyreek Hill, 8,600 as my top-tier wide receiver.
Yeah. Like I was telling you beforehand, that I don't think you can really go wrong with any of the top three receivers this week. But if I had to pick one, I think you chose the right one there just because that matchup is built for a lot of passing. And yeah, as you've detailed over season, the Titans like to give up big passing plays. Mm-hmm. So why not pick the best big play wide receiver in football?
Exactly. Yeah.
This week, I'm all in on the wide receiver revival of disappointing guys coming through, and that starts with Calvin Ridley, 6,600 at Miami. There's no doubt Ridley had a disappointing first month. He scored only one touchdown. He failed to break 100 yards or 20 DraftKings points in any game. Amidst that disappointment, though, he's still on pace for over 100 receptions. He got to double-figure points in all four games that he played. So he's not giving you that little freezing icon, little snowflake icon. He's had at least eight targets in every game. Three times it's been double-digit targets. His 139 air yards per game is third in the league. So the growing pains in this new offense can only last for so long before he goes off because all the underlying metrics are there. We know that he's got chemistry with Matt Ryan. I think Kyle Pitts finally seeming to be on the same page with Ryan just helps Calvin Ridley because it means defenses can't just be shading towards him all the time. And facing a Miami team that's 30th in points allowed to receivers, which again, with both of their top two corners questionable, Sunday feels like the time that Calvin Ridley is going to bust out. And he's only 6,600 now. This is a guy that you and I mean, I was saying he's top five. You were saying he could be the
I said he would be the number one, which has not worked out too well.
So, you know, obviously, you know, that's not going to prove to be true. But it wouldn't shock me if he was top five the rest of the way this season.
Yep.
So if you're getting this guy at 6,600 against a defense that's given up a lot of points to receivers, I love it.
Yeah, he's my mid-tier for literally all the reasons you just said. I also really, I'm starting to believe in Arthur Smith. I was obviously very disappointed the first couple of weeks. The stuff that they've done the last couple of weeks, they look better prepared. I think he understands now what all of his weapons do. And I think that bye is going to be huge. And you can't tell me that we saw 2 weeks ago, they knew they had to get Pitts going. They hadn't. They did. I think this is going to be the same game for Ridley this week, where they're going to make a concerted effort to feed him. And again, I love the point you made. I literally had that in my notes that I think with Pitts going off, that just gives it, you know, the opposing defenses something else to think about, meaning it's more likely. Also, another low-tier dart in this game, Russell Gage is going to be back, who hasn't played since week two. And if both Miami corners are out, I also like Russell Gage this week. I think he's like 3,300. He has not done anything in the two games he played this week, but he still had 9 targets and 5 receptions in week 2, the last game he played in. And again, Miami secondary is so bad, it wouldn't shock me.
I just want to throw in real quick that looking at the cornerback matchups on PFF, they have Tyreek Hill is the 5th biggest advantage over the Titans defensive backfield, and Calvin Ridley with the 8th biggest advantage this week. So,
love it.
Again, these are really good matchups for both of these guys,
especially at that price. The deal with Ridley is, as you're saying, that's dirt cheap for a guy that, I think he was 8,000 to start the season. So,
yeah.
Who's your mid-tier, Joe?
So my mid-tier is the guy that PFF says has the 3rd biggest advantage this week, and that's AJ Brown, 6,300 versus Kansas City. Another guy, he's due for the breakout game. He's averaged 8 targets per game this year in the 4 games that he finished. We're not counting the game where he pulled his hamstring in the first quarter. But he's yet to top 20 points, just like Ridley. Last week, though, only a touchdown away. He put up a season-high 7 receptions, 91 yards against the Bills. The Chiefs are not the Bills, especially on the back end of their defense. There's no Tre'Davious White in Kansas City. So there's a lot of reason to believe this is going to be easier sledding for him this week. And the Titans are not going to stop Mahomes and the rest of that Kansas City offense. Like you said, if they don't turn the ball over, they're going to score 40 in this game. And if they do, they're going to score in the 30s in this game. So as much as the Titans would probably love to just run Derrick Henry 40 times, they will have to pass during this game. And A.J. Brown is situated to take advantage of that.
Yeah, I really like A.J. Brown. Particularly what I loved was when they needed it, because Tennessee's offense has been really starting to look good the last couple of games. Those last couple of drives, it was all A.J. Brown. And I was really, you know, you had said earlier in the year that you still had him as their number one receiver. Julio's been hurt, which that's not a surprise to anyone. But yeah, with both of them on the field and a must-win game for them, it was really impressive to see him kind of come alive. And he actually ended up having a pretty good game. They gave like 7 receptions for 90 yards. So I like that. My low tier is Mecole Hardman, 4,300 at Tennessee. Yep, nice. I'm doubling up on Kansas City wide receivers.
I like it.
If you're playing Mahomes, I actually like stacking Hardman with them because it leaves you money elsewhere. Then you could put Henry or even Adams in that lineup. Everything I said about Tennessee for the game and for the season and the big plays, I mean, Hardman is Tyreek Hill light. Like he's a speedster. He had, I think, a 45-yard reception last week. He scored 9.8 points or more in 4 or 5, which at 4,300, I'll take that. And the big thing is he's seen 32 targets in the last 5 games. He has became the number 3 receiver. And that's something with Kansas City we have not seen in a few years because it's always been Hill, Kelsey, and then a bunch of other guys getting scraps. Now there's a pecking order of Hill, Kelsey, Hardman, and then everybody else getting scraps. And if you're getting him for 4,300, again, against a defense that just lives to give up big plays, I'm going to take a chance on Mecole Hardman, 4,300.
Before I ended up landing on the guy I chose, Hardman was going to be my low tier because, like you said, I love the matchup. It feels like he just hasn't quite had the big touchdown connection that we're used to seeing from him. And it's going to come, especially because his role is bigger than it was last year when he had a couple games like that. My low tier is probably the most definitely the most disappointing receiver and maybe the most disappointing player in fantasy this year, although I don't think any of it's his fault, and that's Allen Robinson, 5,100 at Tampa Bay. He's averaging 8.4 points per game, and his best game this year has been 10.4. So that's why he's dropped all the way to 5,100. Why am I picking him? His targets have gone up three straight weeks as Bill Lazor has taken over the play calling and Fields has become more comfortable. Last week, three of his seven targets were in the end zone. Five of them were 20-plus yards downfield, leading to a whopping 219 air yards, which was the third most in the league last week. The problem, not surprisingly, has not been him. Per PFF, only 54% of his targets have been catchable the last 4 weeks. But Fields was historically accurate. Like, I remember reading multiple guys were saying, like, this is the most accurate QB I've charted in the last 5 years. And there's been some good QBs the last 5 years. So I think this is just a question of Fields figuring out the NFL, becoming comfortable in the pocket. You know, that obviously his first game, he just got demolished by the Cleveland Browns. But the offensive line, Jason Peters has looked actually pretty good at left tackle. Mm-hmm. The rest of the O-line, I don't love it, but they haven't been terrible. In Tampa Bay, 26th against wide receivers. You know, you've talked them up their splits where this is a team you can't run on. If Chicago is going to try to run in this game, the game's already over. You're going to have to pass it. They're probably going to be losing, so they're going to have to pass it even more, as most teams do against Tampa. Again, Allen Robinson, he's seeing the ball. He's seeing the downfield plays. He's seeing the end zone and red zone plays. They've just got to connect. And now that he's down at 5,100, I'm happy to gamble on what that connection happening.
I'm going to tell you, too, I actually think the Bears are going to give Bucks trouble. They did last year. That's a talented defense.
Defense doesn't mess around.
Roquan Smith is a stud. I had him, obviously watched him in college at Georgia. And Fields just, to me, out of all the rookies, he looks the most comfortable. I know he hasn't necessarily had like that breakout game, but it doesn't look like the game is coming really fast to him. I know he got made fun of because he made the comment of it's slow, but it really is the way he looks. He doesn't ever look rushed or panicked. And to that fact, I do like Allen Robbins. I also want to say if Darryl Mooney plays, he's 4,500. Mm-hmm. He's basically had better production and getting the same amount of targets as Robinson. So, again, against the Tampa secondary, if you're trying to go a little cheaper, you could swap that in. But as somebody who paid $24 for Allen Robinson in an auction, I'm begging that this is the week that he finally comes out of a slumper. The tight ends this week, which it's funny that tight ends have sort of now became to me – like, obviously, you got those top-tier guys, but there's just so many options that are viable.
Surprising how many options there are right now.
Like, we did not expect. So I've been going really cheap. I will say I like Pitts this week. I'm going to have to reevaluate Waller after what you said. But Dallas Goedert is my top tier at 4,600. Mm. He was cleared today from the protocol. He was vaccinated, so that's all he needed, I believe, is one more test, which they're testing tomorrow. But the fact that he tested negative day means that he's leaning toward. He does have still a questionable tag, which I didn't totally understand what the reasoning for that was, so obviously check it. But if not, I mean, Ertz is gone. His targets are going to jump. I mean, he was one of the favorite targets anyway, and that was with Ertz still getting about 40% of the targets, two tight ends. He's going to be getting like 80 to 90% of those targets now. His price is going to go up. This is probably going to be the cheapest you're going to see in the rest of the season. It's not a bad matchup versus the Raiders. He's probably my favorite play this week if he's good to go. Dallas Goedert, 4,600, my top tier tight end.
Yeah, I feel like it's just been years of everyone in fantasy football just being like Goedert on different teams.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't know what Ertz will look like in Arizona. I tend to think that's a situation where there's so many options that he'll be a guy who goes off randomly. You won't be able to guess it. But yeah, Goddard now becomes a safer play than he already was. And he was already a good play in general. My top tier guy, like I said, you know, if you got the money, feel free to go for Waller. But I'm going Mike Gesicki, 4,700. He probably would have been one of my plays last week, except he was in the Sunday morning game, which I just kind of steered away from because how many of us are playing lineups in the Sunday morning game? Naturally, he went for 22.5, 8 receptions, 115 yards. But that, you know, that wasn't a surprise. You take away week one, last, which he played, he had 3 targets, no receptions. Last 5 weeks, at least 6 targets every single game. He's averaging almost 15 points per game. And, you know, his worst game is 7 points. If you get 7 points from your tight end, that's not killer when you're paying under 5,000. And then the high-end options are there. You know, he's one of the best options in this offense. The wide receivers are up and down in Miami. Atlanta, not terrible against tight ends, but not great either. I don't think this is a matchup where you're, like, worried about it at all.
Well, just again, a reminder, we haven't really played any good tight ends, but Gronk had a really good game against us. So
Gronk did mess you up, as he was everyone, though, before going down. But, yeah, my whole thing with this game, I even think Tua is a reasonable option this week. My whole thing, like I said, just check that the weather Sunday morning. Just double check there isn't going to be just an insane, like, hurricane type weather. As long as the weather's rainy but, like, clear, otherwise.
Yeah, wind is what worries me for Ryan. Like, that's the one thing he doesn't necessarily play great in, but the rain doesn't bother me.
If it's thunderstorms, where it's just rain, play all these guys. Gesicki, Ridley, Ryan, go for it. But if it's wind and rain, then you're going to have to figure out some different options. So that's all I'm saying with any of the Atlanta or Miami plays this week. I feel good about them. Just double-check that weather.
Yeah, and if Parker is out again, I love Waddle. Like, love Waddle this week against the Falcons. Smith had a great game against them earlier in the year where it was a bunch of short passes to an athletic receiver. I could see Waddle doing the same thing. Even if Parker plays, I could see Waddle having a good game. But you saw the targets he got last week. If Parker's out, Waddle's, to me, a must-start.
Especially if we're right about what Atlanta does.
Yep.
Offensively, in this game.
Which, if they don't, I'm going to be back on the, what is my coach doing? I thought he was an offensive genius. My mid-tier, and we just mentioned him and said we'd probably stay away. I'm not going to. It's Zach Ertz, 3,900 versus Houston. I get that there's a ton of weapons. I get that he just got, you know, traded over there. It's just, it's Houston. They're dead last in the NFL versus tight ends. 8 targets a game, giving up 6 receptions for almost 70 yards per game, just under a touchdown per game, and 12 points per game in fantasy. That is non-PPR. So in PPR, that's 18 points per game. I'm going to take that chance. I think that they're going to want to also, you know, Williams really added a factor to their offense. And if you notice, since Williams has been out, the offense has not been quite as solid. I know they look good against Cleveland, but the week before they kind of struggled with his injury. And I just think that they want to, again, show to people that you can't really contain us anywhere. Because when their offense those first few weeks, especially when Williams got going, you could argue it was the scariest offense in the NFL because just how easily they went up and down the field. I don't think you make this kind of trade unless you want to make him an instant impact. And what a better way to do it than against the worst team in the NFL versus tight ends. So Zach Ertz is my mid-tier tight end at 3,900.
Right. Like I said, I think, you know, it's hard to guess the non-Hopkins guys in this Arizona offense. But it's a pretty good guess against Houston, as you laid out. And, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised that they kind of want to be like, this is why we got this guy right away. Like, show that. So I do like that play, especially, again, if it's under 4,000 and it's a talented guy against a terrible defense.
You catch one red zone touchdown and you're good.
Right. And then, yeah, speaking of guys who are cheap that pay off just by scoring touchdowns, Ricky Seals-Jones, my low tier last week. He's my mid tier now.
He's your guy, too.
Yeah, so he's become my guy, which he never was before. I mean, he was just kind of languishing on teams as like a wide receiver slash tight end. But like I said last week, 2 weeks ago, he played 99% of the snaps. He saw 9 targets against New Orleans, and I was like, this is going to be the norm in this offense. As long as Logan Thomas is out, he's going to play a bunch of snaps, get a lot of targets. Last week, 100% of the snaps, 6 targets, one of them went for a touchdown. And all of a sudden, you were getting 15.8 points from a guy you paid $3,000 for. This week, he's playing Kansas City. Again, Kansas City is going to light this Washington team up. They are going to have to pass, which is great because Kansas City gives up more yards to tight ends than any other defense. 88 yards per game.
88 so, and a half. Don't yeah, shortchange it. It's a lot.
So, I mean, shoot, there's a chance Ricky Seals-Jones has a reasonable shot at giving you that 100-yard bonus even this week. But again, if he catches three passes for 40 yards and a touchdown, we're golden. Like, I'm all in on Ricky Seals-Jones until Logan Thomas is back, especially in a matchup like this, which is probably the best matchup possible for him because they'll have to pass a lot, and it's a bad defense against tight ends.
And just to back that up, they're giving up that many yards, which is the most in the NFL, I think, by like 12 yards. There is 12 teams that give up more targets to tight ends per game and 7 that give up more receptions. So, I mean, it's chunk plays at tight end. We share a tight end, our low tier. So I'm going to go ahead and just give a bonus one. I'm going to go with Anthony Firkser for Tennessee, who, I mean, the Chiefs suck against the secondary. I like him this week. You got him at 3,100, and then obviously who we're both going to go over, CJ, do you know how to say, is it Uzumaha?
Oh, shoot. I just realized. I totally blanked. I was describing Ricky Seals-Jones against Kansas City. That's who he played last week who we lit up. My apologies. That's what I get for forgetting to finish my tight end research. He's playing Green Bay this week. Not as terrible against tight ends. Still going to light up this Washington team. So not quite as golden matchup as last week. But
they give up 5.5 receptions for 50 yards. So, I mean, it's not like, again, it's a good defense.
And again, he's playing 100% of the snaps. He's seen 15 targets in the two games he's played as the starter. And they're going to throw the ball 40 times because Green Bay is going to be pouring in the points in this game. So, yeah, my apologies on that, but does not change my overall enthusiasm for Ricky Seals-Jones. And like we said, that plays into your first gear pick because, again, Kansas City is terrible against tight ends.
But we both love CJ Uzumaha? Uzma? Ozma? How you say it?
Well, let me see if Pro Football Reference does the... the thing. I feel like they do this for the NBA and they don't do it for the NFL guys where like we'll tell you how to pronounce their name. So I don't Uzoma? I don't know. Well, apologies to CJ. We do not know how to pronounce your name. But maybe we'll learn because he's caught touchdowns in two of the last three Bengals games. Now, this is not a guy. I mean, he did have 95 yards against Jacksonville. Jacksonville's just a terrible defense. But, you know, the Ravens have had their struggles against tight ends this year. They are fourth in yards allowed to tight ends. And, again, this is a game you picked Lamar Jackson, I think, for very good reason. We expect Baltimore to be able to score in Cincinnati. So I don't think this is one of those games where Joe Burrow only throws 25 passes. I think this is a game where he's throwing some real passes. Jamar Chase was almost one of my picks this week. I like the Bengals, but... the thing with Uzoma is, unlike Tyler Boyd or T. Higgins, who may or may not go off because Chase is the only sure thing here, you're not spending any money to get C.J. Uzoma. It's 3,000. And he's caught touchdowns two of the last 3 weeks. You catch one touchdown. It could be one catch, 5 yards, touchdown. 7.5 points for a guy who was 3,000, fine with that. If this happens to be a game, because, again, Baltimore is going to be keying on the wide receivers, and they haven't been great against tight ends. This could be a game, four or five catches, and he did have the 95 yards one time. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that he gives you 15 or 16 from the lowest price point, basically, that you're going to consider.
I think you're being modest. They give up the most receptions to tight ends in the NFL. Oh, yeah. They are fourth for yards per game and tied second for the most touchdowns. So... it's really good matchup.
And this isn't like when we were high on T.J. Hockenson against them, and then they just keyed their entire defense around stopping T.J. Hockenson in the passing game. They're going to be trying to stop Jamar Chase.
Other way, yep.
And after that, it's going to be the other two receivers. And that's why he's been.
And Higgins has, I think, I read one of the worst matchups in the NFL this week for wide receiver. So they have a corner that apparently is going to shadow him, and they said it's apparently a good matchup. So I was reading on PFF. All right, moving on to the flex real quick. These guys are lower, and the reason is I gave you some expensive options at receiver and running back, and I want people to be able to build out lineups. Chuba Hubbard, 6,100. I mean, he scored 35 points over his last two games. He's had 40 carries in those two games and an additional 9 targets. So you're talking about 25 basically touches per game. Unfortunately for me, Sam Darnold has regressed, who I was really high on earlier in the season. That is what, to me, is leading to all these opportunities for Hubbard while McCaffrey continues to recover. The Giants have really struggled with running backs, giving up multiple touchdowns to lead back in back-to-back games. If Hubbard sees 24 looks against his D, he's going to have a great chance to go off. Running backs who catch balls out of the backfield have had success against the Giants as well. I think at 6,100, right below Henderson, he's probably the safest play. Again, just because of the volume and the matchup, you can't get much better than that. The mid-tier, which again, he's pretty low. My boy Jamison Crowder, 4,900 at New England. I'm a big believer in having a cheap play at wide receiver in your lineup who's going to have a low floor and a chance to break out. Crowder is exactly the kind of guy I look for in these situations. He's seen 15 targets in the two games this season. He's turned into 11 receptions, and in both games, the Jets were competitive. I don't think that's going to be the case against New England and Foxborough, meaning more pass attempts and opportunities for Crowder. I know some will worry that, well, Wilson had more INTs and completions at half in the first game versus New England. He did, and that rookie quarterbacks do awful against New England. They do. But with all that being true, Braxton Berrios, who was playing the Jamison Crowder role in the first matchup versus New England, had 7 receptions for 73 yards. Crowder is a much better version of Braxton Berrios. I am confident he's going to have at least 5-6 receptions, depending if the game gets bad, he scores a touchdown. Crowder, to me, is a guaranteed 10 points and could easily score 20, and at 4,900, you can't beat that. And then my low, low, low tier, Rashad Bateman, 3,400 versus Cincy. He finally made his NFL debut.
Bateman.
Finally made his debut last week versus the Chargers. He tied for the team lead in targets, which was kind of shocking at 6. It was a very modest 4 catches, 29 yards. But again, Bateman was a first-round pick for a reason. I think Baltimore has already proved, and they will continue, that they want to get him involved. And at this price, I don't think you're going to get a guy that's going to have a higher target share than what Bateman saw in his first action last week. And there's a good chance, obviously, it will increase with it being his second week. I really do like the Bateman-Jackson stack if you're playing Jackson, because, I mean, that's basically for 10 grand. You're getting those guys, and you can really now, you know, add a Hill, Adams, a Henry, et cetera.
Yeah, I love the Bateman play. As someone who had Bateman ahead of Waddle on my big board, I'm all in. I love it. Going to the defenses. You know, I don't think it's a huge surprise. If you want to spend $5,000 on the Rams, go for it. I'm going my high end all the way down to 3,400. Give me the New England Patriots against the New York Jets. Like you said, this one's in Foxborough. The game where they intercepted Zach Wilson 4 times and scored 19 points on DraftKings was in New York or New Jersey. So, you know, do I expect Zach Wilson to be quite as flustered round 2? Probably not. But considering now he's going on the road, I don't think it's going to be a whole lot better. The Jets have turned the ball over in every single game this season. The only team that takes sacks at a higher rate is the Chicago Bears. This is a great matchup. And again, it's only 3,400. Why you would spend $5,000 on the Rams to face the Lions?
Yeah, New England slowed down mid-tier. Dallas, the best offense in the NFL, for 3 quarters last week.
Yeah. I think the New England defense is good.
I do too.
This one, I'm just completely confused at the price here.
I'm glad, because it's in all the lineups I've already built.
I'm honestly, I'm pretty surprised the Patriots weren't at least 500, if not 1,000 more, considering they were facing the worst offense fantasy wise. The Cardinals getting the 30th ranked one on DraftKings. The Houston Texans, who again also start a rookie quarterback and the worst rookie quarterback. And then the Cardinals defense has been really good. They're getting 10 points per game. They've had one legitimately bad game this year against Minnesota. Even 5 points against the Rams, I think, is a good game. So this is a defense that's been forcing turnovers, 13 turnovers forced, 17 sacks, and it's Houston. Like, what are you afraid of? The worst case is Houston doesn't turn the ball over and they score 13 points. Like, and it's 3,100. This is like, they're at least going to give you 5, and they could give you 25. So I don't understand that one at all. I'm worried by saying this that I'm just willing this game into being a 40-point blowout. But my load here is the New York Giants defense at 2,500. You could also make an argument for the Jets, which it's terrifying to pick either New York team right now. But
I'd rather take my chances with Atlanta or Miami and then hope one of those offenses does crap.
I mean, I can see that. The Patriots have had a weird number of turnovers, a lot of fumbles, so I don't know if that's really repeatable long term. But the Jets defense isn't actually terrible. The Giants, the reasoning here is simple. It's the opposing QB. Like, do I trust him to stop turning the ball over? Because Sam Darnold seems like he's going back to his Jets ways.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a chance he pulls out of it. I'm a big Joe Brady fan as a play caller. I think that offense is talented. But it's hard to look worse than Darnold looked last week. I know that he didn't get a lot of help. There were like 6 drops. But he's been a turnover machine. He can't even complete passes. 17 of 41 last week. He has 6 interceptions the last 3 weeks. So do I expect the Giants to stop the Panthers? No. Like, even if Darnold turns the ball over 3 times, DJ Moore is going to get 100 yards. Chuba Hubbard's going to score a touchdown or 2. Like, they're going to score, but that doesn't matter if the Sam Darnold throws a pick 6 and then another 1 or 2 picks just for fun. So this is not, I'm not saying fade the Panthers against the Giants, because God, no, don't do that. Lean into the Panthers. But at the same time, the way Sam Darnold's playing right now, if you want to save a lot of money, I feel like the Giants are a solid play. Although again, Cardinals and Patriots, to me, these are like 2 of the top 3 or 4 defenses to play this week. And you're getting them at 31 or 34. Like, I'm probably going to have 1 of those 2 defenses in every lineup that I do.
Yeah, the Cardinals are just I can't get over it. It's crazy. Because again, their defense has consistently been good against really good teams as well. One more bonus, real quick, defense. If you believe in the Ravens, which I'm starting to, and I love Joe Burrow and the Bengals, I think they could have a tough time Sunday. And I think the Ravens are also in that 3,000, 3,100 range.
That's the reason that I didn't pick Burrow. I love him. I thought about it this week, but I could see that game going.
In Baltimore.
We saw what happened to the Chargers last week. So who's to say it won't happen to the Bengals this week?
So that wouldn't surprise me. You got anything you want to plug real quick, Joe, before we get out of here?
No, I just say, as we always say, check out the IBN, all the pods. Like I said, Alan is doing good work on that gambling one. It's just a shame that we didn't all get to hear it last week and profit off of it. So hopefully this week he's just as sharp on the picks.
And it's another reason why you should be an all-star, though, because if you're an IB all-star, he did post the picks for free in the all-star group on Sunday morning, so you could have got those. But for Keith Fleming and Joe the Brain Matz, this has been the Week 7 preview of the Weekly Daily Fantasy Football Podcast on the IB Sports Podcast Network. Good luck with your lineups, guys.